be positive with it too, man. There's a lot of sides of this job and this path that we all choose to kind of do this or put our time into this stuff. That's really mostly discouraging most of the time. The little wins and all the things that you can find to like help you push through and encourage your friend and celebrate their victories too. You know, if you get buddies who get on a gig or have something cool happen with their playing, just be as happy as you can be for them, because the more people you have winning around you too, that just means you're gonna, I feel like, kind of have some of that fall into your lap too.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 23.
Today's guest is John Bostwick, who is the touring drummer for Parker McCollum. Of course, he was just added as one of the special guests for Morgan Wallen tour, so that'll be really awesome to see him out there.
Yeah, John was a blast to talk to. I had never met him before, and kind of when you come into these situations, you have no idea what to expect in talking to a new person, and it was just supernatural. Not supernatural, just supernatural. You know what I'm saying?
Good clarification there. Yeah.
Supernatural. It's magical.
Yeah, John's awesome. He's just another one of these examples of the, you know, these guys moving down here and just going for it, just working really hard, you know, just trying to pay rent and just taking gigs as he can, and then eventually he kind of hit gold, and you know, he's got a really good gig right now, so we're excited to see where he's going to go with that. And this will be the last episode for 2022.
It's pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, thanks for everyone that's been on this journey with us. It's been really fulfilling for both of us, and we've got a lot more to come, don't we?
We sure do. Y'all have no idea. Oh, I mean, maybe you do.
Yeah.
Never mind.
No, we've got some really cool announcements coming. We've got some merch coming, besides just awesome guests, of course, as well.
Yep, we're getting a blimp.
We are not getting a blimp.
Might get a blimp.
Okay. Something I don't know. Cool. I don't know how we're paying for that, but
I'm going to talk to Elon.
God.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nashville Drummers Podcast. And we want to wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. So glad you're here, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. What'd you do today?
Man, I was just telling him. Just been, you know, back in my little studio space trying to get a bunch of rad gear mounted up, and surprisingly that takes a lot more work than I thought.
Yeah.
Everything's so freaking heavy. So I've been doing that today, and then just playing with the dog and home for a little bit, so finally kinda settle in again.
Yeah. What kind of dog you got?
So I can't say it's my dog. It's my girlfriend's dog, but I love him. He's a Pitbull Mastiff Lab.
Oh.
So he's like 92 pounds.
Nice.
He's a big boy.
Yeah.
But he's a great dog. And the drums don't bother him, so
I'll,
he's kind of
curious,
so
yeah,
he's a good little partner.
I love it. Yeah.
Sweet. So for those that don't know you, kind of give us the quick, who are you playing with? What are your current gig or gigs look like right now?
Right now, I'm currently on tour with a Texas country artist named Parker McCollum. Been out with him for about a year and a half now. And I've lived in Nashville for, I think, almost 7 years now, I think, which is crazy. It's kind of been a blur, but
Yeah, I don't know about you. My first, like, 3 years, I had absolutely no clue what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just an ignorant fuck.
Yeah, you got to be pretty naive.
Yeah.
I think that's half of it.
Wait, so what do you call yourself now?
Slightly less ignorant.
Okay.
Fuck.
Yeah. A little more enlightened.
Yeah, no, I'm an enlightened fuck. There we go.
Yeah, there we go.
I like that.
That's
right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's half the battle. I think it's just moving here, you know? And then also, I feel like if you think about it too much, you probably wouldn't do it because it doesn't make any sense. None of this makes any fucking sense.
No, it so makes it's totally insane to just pick up and move here. What, you're gonna go and try to do music in Nashville?
Yeah, and play drums. It's just like you explain it to people and they don't really get it.
Yeah.
You gotta like leave everything behind and go do that. But I feel like if you know too much or if you think about it, you wouldn't do it because it's kind of scary. If you know, looking back, it's like, man, I don't think I could do that twice, some of the stuff I had to do.
No.
Like moving here. I would, but it'd be harder.
Yeah. Well, and where did you move from?
I moved from Cincinnati. I was living there in Ohio.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Originally from Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
But I moved to Cincy for music school. It was called Cincinnati Conservatory for Music.
Cool.
And I studied there. I was kind of like a jazz head there for a little bit. It was like a bebop kind of heavy school there in the program and that I was in.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Same.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing. I'm playing country, but I was like, none of my background is reflective of what I'm doing right now, per se. It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
that's sick.
But yeah, I was mostly like a jazz head as a kid growing up, and I was playing in big bands, you know, like around town as a kid, and kind of sitting in with those when I was really little. And And I loved that stuff. It was so much fun. And once I finished music school, I left there and I said, okay, I'm going to move to Nashville and I'm going to just like keep an open mind. I'm going to pretend I have no idea. Cause I didn't, you know, I'd never really seen a number chart. I was doing totally different kind of style of like music and everything. Just my experience was so different to hear. And so it was just kind of like a little bit of a shock. I'm like, man, I know nothing. And I have like barely any work going for me right now. Yeah. And I have no idea what I'm doing, but like.
So what was it that made you decide to come to Nashville?
Man, I was in, so I was back at that music school for about 3 years. And I was like, man, I'm not loving this. I don't need this stupid like fucking degree. I'm just like, I'm grateful for the time here. Love the experience here. But I'm just like, I'm ready to go play. I was already starting to tour with a boy band. I was actually based out of Nashville.
No kidding. Yeah.
They were called Anthem Lights.
Okay.
It's one of my buddy's bands. He joined the band a few years before I started playing with them. And
yeah.
And so he would call me whenever they needed someone. I'd actually like sometimes fly to Cincinnati during like often the weekends from school. So that was kind of like a little bit of encouragement. It's like, man, I'm already going out with these guys, getting a little work. Maybe I can like, you know, move there and actually get more than that and see what happens. And so that was kind of like a catalyst for that.
But yeah.
I was playing with them but they even hated touring. So there was never really much of that. So it was like bittersweet. When we did, it was fun, but they hated going on the road.
Oh my gosh.
But,
oh, I feel that.
Yeah.
The road even, I don't know your opinion on this. Let's get your opinion on this.
Yeah.
But like the road, even like the good of it is like not as glamorous. Maybe at the very, very peak it might be, but my God, it's still just like, it can be just so brutal.
Yeah. I hate that cliche saying you really have to love it, but
yeah.
It's like, it's when it's rough, it's rough.
Yeah.
But that's why half of it though, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, like you're naive and you're just like, you know, I don't give a shit. I just love doing it, man. I'm just, it's worth the extra kind of like, you know, breaking your body to kind of do it a little bit.
Yeah. Like, okay, I just know that I'm going out for a month and a half. Cool. I know that I'm not really going to sleep. I'm going to get sick several times.
Oh, no, dude. It's just, you just get bunk sleep, man. Yeah. You don't actually sleep when you're gone. It's just like, it's just kind of like a very surface sleep. Yep. And by the end of that whole run, you're just like, you're kind of like a shell of a man. You're pretty dead. But you love it at the same time. Yep. You know, I was always
better smiling the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Sleep when you're dead, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, you were saying that as we came in. You're like, yeah, you just sleep when you're dead.
Right on, man.
Saying that to Mark.
I don't know if that's like the healthiest, like.
I think that's Mark's mindset, probably.
Yeah, that is Mark.
Is that what he says too?
Probably. I don't.
Well, it just seems to be what he's always just doing something. Yeah.
That sense of urgency, man.
Yeah.
Wanting to do some stuff and, you know, because you love it.
Well, life is short. You have a very, very limited amount of time to do all of the stuff. And to know that, like, that impending, like, memento mori, like, the you know, very, like, Roman stoic, you will die. Know that you will die.
Yep.
What are you going to do with that time that's ever shortening between whenever it is that you die?
Yeah.
Who knows when that is? But every moment you're alive, it's getting that much closer. Are you cool with, like, spending a lot of that time doing nothing?
Might as well just go for it, man.
Might as well go
with just
hard.
A very, very big intensity, whatever you're doing.
Yep.
I love that.
You know, and it usually tends to work out though if you do that.
Yeah. So how do you approach that? Obviously you've accomplished a lot. You've seemed to have, in my opinion, you're going in the direction that hopefully that you've wanted to go. And it sounds like
so far, man. Yeah. It's been a really fun ride.
Yeah. How have you give us your journey in getting here and getting to where you are now, obviously the how you got the gig, that kind of thing. How have you approached that? Because with that intensity, that passion.
Man, I think that right place, right time thing kind of comes into it.
Yeah.
But I just want to really answer.
Well, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
Let's break it into pieces. Let's talk about your journey. I just want to parse out how, since we're talking about kind of living passionately and pursuing things with intensity, to borrow your word.
Yeah.
I just want to know your journey since moving here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go back to the very beginning, how you got started. In fact, you know what?
Do you want to go back to the beginning?
Let's go back to the beginning now.
Let's go there.
Change my mind.
All right. Yep.
Let's do it. So you're wearing a diaper. And what happened?
Let's go all the way back.
It's that classic kind of like pots and pans as a baby kind of story. You know, like a lot of people have it.
Yep.
Played
in
church a lot as a kid when I was like.
What kind of church did you grow up in?
I grew up Pentecostal.
Okay.
So very, like speaking in tongues, very intense kind of like church worship went on for a little bit. And
yep.
My mom and dad didn't want me to play in bars or anything, but they're like, You can play in church all you want.
Yeah.
You can do all like the school stuff you want, all the band programs, jazz band, what, everything that I could do, I did.
Yeah.
Because I was just obsessed as a kid. This is all I wanted to do, yeah. You know, and going into high school, it only fed that even more, you know, because the programs get bigger and you can do like statewide stuff. And,
right.
You know, tried marching snare for a year, and that was kind of like a successful mess a little bit. You know,
did you ever do any percussion, or was it always drum set?
Yeah, I did like the classical percussion through high school. I didn't want to go do that in college. It just wasn't my bag. And you know, I loved playing drum set.
Yeah, at that point, like, you pretty much know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I was in that same boat.
You gotta be so intense with that.
I did
kind
of do more. I decided to do classical.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm only doing drum set. But like, but yeah, you kind of figure it out at that point.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many dudes at the school I was at doing the classical stuff, and they were just, like I said, so much more intense with that. And I was like, well, they're gonna beat me. So I'm like, I'm gonna stick to what I love and kind of try to stay in my lane a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to beat intensity.
Yeah. You know, it's like there's always someone who's gonna like come at it harder than you do, and
that's a good topic. Yeah. So like, do we think, does intensity beat skill, or does intensity
like beat talent?
Yeah,
well, I think so.
To a certain, I think there's a threshold, right? I mean,
well, to a certain degree, because then you're gonna run into people.
Skill has to be first,
intense, and also skillful.
Yeah,
you know, who are really at the top, kind of doing stuff. But
well, I mean, okay, so for instance, I went to high school with a guy named Andy Davidson. Who was a sick snare drum player. And I found out after high school, they're like, oh yeah, every day in PE, he would sit and just practice rudiments instead of doing whatever was in PE. I was like, that was an option?
Yeah, right.
Damn it. That was a great option. If I would have known that I could do that. But that's the thing. That's like he must have had the wherewithal to ask that question, which means he was approaching that with more intensity at that time.
Yeah, like, that's a good example.
Especially at a young age. It's like, if you're a teacher and you see a kid that says, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And I just like, I want to do it right now. It's like, okay, that's half the point of school, man.
Right.
You want to help a kid find what they fucking love to do.
So,
right.
So what kind of music were you listening to at that early age?
Favorite drummers as a kid. And I was listening to a lot of CCM music and a lot of like live worship records as like a really little kid. I remember, like, when I was little, my mom, she got this CD. It was Israel, Houghton Life in South Africa. So there was when you moved it, it went from Israel's face to a lion. And I was a little kid, I was just like, this is sick. And then you put the CD in, and you're just like, this is mind-blowing. But I was listening to that stuff, a lot of jazz records, too, at the time, like a guy named Hank Mobley. I just go to the library, honestly, as a little kid, and take my backpack, and just any CD that looked cool to me, I just grab it, and then I just put it in my backpack. Well, I wish I checked them out first. But usually it'd be more than they'd let me. And I'd just beg them. They'd say, okay, you can take the 30.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to my bedroom where my kit was. I'd put every CD in and just play through every song. Just like movie soundtrack, everything. Operas, like any just bullshit I could find.
Dude.
I just wanted to play to everything. It was like sparks going off.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Stuff and stuff.
That's like the equivalent of today, just having, you know, Spotify playlists. And
Just let music go through. Yeah. Play what comes to you, you know. My hands are doing this right now. It's funny, but I would do that like every day as a kid, and never return the CDs, and then get like really bad late fees. My mom would kill me, but you know, it was just fun. It was like such
the
for me. It was like
going trying to track just, it down.
But mainly I was like really drawn to a lot of jazz records as like a little kid, and then a mix of kind of like, you know, more of the commercial stuff like worship records when I was little, just all that, and just kind of. You know, loved R&B as well.
Yeah.
Just for a little kid, I don't know if that was normal or not, but.
What kind of jazz records were you like really, really obsessed
Man,
with?
Man, there was a Count Basie and Sinatra record. It's got like rose colored glasses on it and a couple other songs that are or Pennies from Heaven. I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
But that record is insane. That big band's incredible. Hank Mobley's Soul Station was a good one.
Right.
One of my old teachers gave that to me when I was a little kid. It's really he's kind of the reason I didn't want to pursue that route and like go again. There were dudes who were doing like jazz at school. We were all studying, but they were more intense with it. I liked it because how much better it made you at everything else.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
But they wanted to move to New York and do that stuff. But I was like, Hank Mobley died under a bridge homeless.
Yeah.
And he was a fan. I'm like, that scared me as a little kid hearing the stories of all these dudes I love just like having the worst kind of outcome. I was like, man, maybe that's not for me. Maybe I want to try to have something with a little more,
a little more staying and
yeah, something
protecting me kind of power.
But that kind of stuff. Jamie Collum, he's a British like pop jazz guy. he's got a song called Photograph, one of his first records. And that song got me into jazz music. Wow. I was like, might have been in fifth grade. And there's this piano solo on it. And I was just like, you know, it's just you're a little kid and you're just hearing it. And your mind's just like shooting sparks. You're like, this is so good. Like, yeah. I'm hooked. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, this is what I want to play.
When that particular thing hits you, it's weird because it doesn't hit for everybody. Mm-hmm. You can show that to 100 people and, you know, maybe only 5 or 10 of them are going to be like, whoa, that is really special.
Like some people,
maybe a quarter or half of them will be like, okay, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. But most are going to be like, yeah, it's not, I wouldn't gravitate towards that at all. But
yeah,
when when that really hits, you're like, no, this is like, this is beautiful to me. Mm-hmm. This
actually,
speaks to me.
Moves me.
Right. Yeah. Like it's hard to, I've had that with certain bands. I'm like, no, this music it's gorgeous. It's like, it's like a dream to me. Mm-hmm. Really? It just sounds like chaos. It's like soothing to my soul. Yeah. How do I share this experience with you guys? I want to.
You're describing flying formation, right?
Yeah. Actually, specifically, I was thinking I was thinking about
that's his prog band that he's in.
Thinking of a band called Mr. Metaphor that I found in high school, and they were like, they're this really interesting kind of math rock indie thing, and I just like really interesting ambient sounds, and I shared it with so many people. And once in a while, I'll share it with someone who's like, holy shit, this is really, really special. But usually I'll share it with people and they're like, yeah, that's pretty weird. Like,
I know you're like, yeah, I wish you could hear it.
If you could hear it from with my ears and my heart, this is everything. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Well, then we got to play the stuff that makes them feel that way.
Right.
You know, so you can keep the lights on. And
right.
Play the stuff that makes
us go
just
like, because I like them to get that feeling too.
Yeah,
I like how as a kid that you were just so open minded. Because I feel like most kids would just like, and I know for me, I was like, okay, I'm into punk rock, or I'm gonna only listen to the Chili Peppers or Linkin Park, and I didn't really listen to a lot of other stuff.
Yeah,
what was it for you that kind of gave you like that permission or intensity to? Like, why was that important for you to listen to all these different genres?
Man, I don't think it wasn't that deep. I think it was more of just, like, my attention span. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, you know, accident. Like, I remember, like, some of the bands or CDs I'd listen to, I'd be telling my friends, like, oh, this one song goes, I didn't even remember the name or the band name. I was just, like, listening through everything. My attention span was so bad as a kid, and still kind of sometimes. But, like, that, for me, it really wasn't just kind of like a practice or anything. It was just, like, I just loved listening down and just... It was just that, you know, like you said, that feeling of like, this is cool. But then I'd have to remind myself, like, hey, actually, like, read the back of the soundtrack, you know, like, see who's playing on the record and stuff. And, you know, actually remember the bands. Because I have all these bands I loved, and I just would forget the names of them because I was just, you know, like, burning through CDs.
Yeah.
But
what's this one? It kind of looks like that. Yeah.
So was your list of, if you even had a list of, like, influential drummers at that early age.
Yeah.
Was that also as diverse as the music you were listening to? Like, were you picking up on, as you said, you were kind of looking at the back of the, or the inside,
I think so,
you know,
man.
Covers,
but it's
seeing
funny,
who
like,
the players were.
I don't think I sound like a lot of the players I listened to as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love JoJo Merritt, but, like, I don't play like him. You know, I'm not trying to sound it, but I remember, like, as a kid intensely loving him. One dude I really am a huge fan of still to this day, and I just... If I had to pick one dude, his name's Teddy Campbell.
Yeah.
He was like the drummer for the first American Idol backing band.
Yeah, he was.
I don't know him.
Just kind of like,
dude,
he was Teddy's, just kind of like one of those, Teddy's played awesome with everyone. Yep. He was on the Stevie Wonder gig at one point. I forget who he's been playing with recently. What's that song? Lowdown?
Oh, yeah.
Who is that? He's playing with that band right now. I forget.
Oh, is he?
I forget the name of the guy, but see, again, I'm like so bad at naming.
He's total A-lister guy.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. Like, really tight player. And that's the thing I was attracted to. I was playing. It's just like, he was so tight. And also, he was playing for like so many artists.
Yes.
That was like the thing I loved as a kid. I was like, man, I'm not like, I get so nervous no matter how many times I try to do like a drum solo competition or like do that stuff. I get so anxious. I love playing like for and behind people.
Yeah.
And as a little kid, I was like, that's what I really love doing. And that's kind of reflective. I'm like the worst example of trying to be like a solo drummer artist or something, you know?
Yeah.
But I love playing for people. And that's kind of where I found like my niche.
I mean, luckily that's the gig. I mean, there's not many solo you know, individual drummers, like, mm-hmm. away from like the marching activity.
Yeah, right? Like I don't think I would feel like a clinician, like a clinic or something, or yeah. you know what I mean. But
yeah,
you might be surprised.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I feel like I'm so meat and potatoes. I like sometimes I wonder.
That's
like,
the thing. I mean, I just came from PASIC. If you're familiar yeah. with that convention in yeah, Indianapolis, yeah. I mean, you know, all those drummers are mm-hmm. are known for the gigs they've had and the artists they played for.
Yeah,
you know, Omar Hakim had a killer clinic.
Oh, was he there?
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Dave Weckl, mm-hmm. Benny Greb was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Benny's, I guess, maybe more of a, you know, stylistic.
He's been around
individual.
For a Yeah. Too finally, I remember when I first like every journal was starting to like talk about him. He had the kind of like he just started that deal with Meinl and mm-hmm. had some Dude. Cool and like the Sand Ride came out. That was like super cool. Yeah. And
he's
you love
I love Benny.
Yeah, he's disciplined too, man. He's yes, very he's regimented from what I hear. Mm-hmm. He's pretty
man. Did you watch his Art and Science of Groove DVD? If you have not seen that
again, as a kid, I was so cheap. I'd just get whatever I could on YouTube. I'd never buy any DVDs. Bro, I'm the worst. Like. Student,
we're gonna
sometimes with that yeah. stuff.
I'm gonna start. We're like trying to yeah. have Nashville drummers mm-hmm. hangs, just like with the
right
people
on,
that
man.
Have been.
Yeah,
I want like hang out and like just watch some great stuff. And I've got that. I loaned it out to a friend. I'm gonna bring it, get him to mm-hmm. give it back. There is a moment in that where he's explaining the whole thing is how to get your pocket deeper and deeper, right?
Yeah,
because his pocket's insane.
Well, didn't he talk about he wasn't like a naturally kind of like
yes.
He's drummer. I don't know what to degree, but he would talk about how he's like, I couldn't actually like, I wasn't like a naturally kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like to me, well, he probably could still have been amazing, but I think he really had to like,
he said, he's like, you know, people talk about the pocket and the feel thing and they'll say you're born with it. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah,
and that was
it.
Very disappointing to me because I didn't have it.
And he wanted it.
Right. Yeah. And he has proven that it is not a fact that mm-hmm. you either have it or you don't, because yeah. his pocket has come leaps and bounds from when I first saw him. He was always like a good player,
but you can kind of see his progress throughout the yes. years, even as like a clinician too.
But there's this moment where he's talking about subdivisions and understanding subdivisions, and he's like, and really getting comfortable with them. He's like, the deeper your understanding and comfortability get with them, the deeper your pocket gets. And he proceeds to play along to a 16th note shaker. Just that's the track. And he plays quarter notes, and it's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's the money right there.
That's my spiel about
that. A little story about how like regimented he is.
Yeah.
I worked at Meinl during like COVID when everyone just lost your entire fucking life. And
yeah.
They were apparently I had heard through a drummer friend of mine that they were like hiring other drummers, like younger dudes, and which makes sense. You kind of want drummers to work at a warehouse
right.
with drum stuff. They maybe handle it with a little better care, but somehow I was able to get a job in that warehouse, you know, and survive through the year.
Yeah.
But apparently there was one of the drummers there, this guy named Jason, he mentioned that Chris Brewer, the artist guy, I think yeah. in his desk mm-hmm. or somewhere in that office, he said he saw it. It's one of Benny Greb's like practice logs. And then he was talking about how fucking regimented the guy is and just flipping through these page after page, like logging hour after, like,
yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is no joke. The dude was like, just very, and it's for like years.
I need to ask Chris to show me that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe he did. Like he could probably say like, I'm a fucking liar. But I'm pretty sure that that drummer might still be working there. I'm not sure. But he was like, yeah, dude, he's got one of his like practice log books. And he like looked there. And like one of his like original DVDs, I think.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense. Mine will probably like help with some of that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So it makes sense that he might have it.
Be highly
if
motivated
you can get your hands on that,
yeah.
that'd be pretty cool to look at.
Ooh,
and just kind of see.
So cool.
Yeah.
Talk about intensity Ooh, again, right? That's another
right.
level.
Oh, the myth.
Yeah. I'm writing that down.
Chris Brewer,
I'm a text.
Like, he's Chris, like, yeah, that dude's a goddamn liar.
Chris, I know it's here. Show it to me.
Listen,
just insist that it's real.
Exactly.
I have an inside source.
We'll start posting on social media.
That's actually one of the things that I've been speaking of insisting. That's one of the things I've been doing downtown. I've been telling people. So, you know, I play a lot at Tootsie's. I'll tell them.
Oh, right on.
Every day, I'm like, hey, y'all tried the lobster? It's not on the menu. You gotta ask insistently for it. Mm-hmm. Just really, like, they're gonna tell you it's not. Well, we don't serve lobster, and you
keep asking. Pushing.
They've got it.
They really
trust me.
Are you just screwing with people?
They do not have lobster there, but that is,
and they get really frustrated. All right,
yeah.
Yeah. That is something
that's
you
kinda,
would do.
That's kind of mean. Just people are on vacation, pot. You know, and they're like, oh, I'm getting some fucking lobster,
yeah,
and
that's
some guy really likes seafood.
Just get their hopes up.
We got a bit of a mean streak.
Yeah.
A little bit. Just a tiny bit.
Who hurt you, Nate?
Who didn't hurt me, Dan?
Yeah, all of Broadway.
That's a shorter list.
Jeez. Well, anyway, nice segue there. I want to go back to something you said about how, like, early on, you wanted to be like the band guy, right? You wanted to be behind.
Yeah.
You wanted to play for many different artists. So I guess take us back to, you know, moving to Nashville in those early years, what those gigs were like. Like, were you doing Broadway or were you just trying to land those different artist gigs? How did you approach that?
I did Broadway at my second year into living in Nashville, and that was like the best thing for me. But when I first moved there, I had a family friend that I knew about, and she's like, I have a room above my garage. And I'm like, she's like, you're welcome to, like, you know, like, schlep it up there till you find a place. I was like, awesome, free space. I didn't have any gigs, so I just kind of like packed my car. I think my sister like put some of my drums in her car and we drove there, and then they left, and I was like, well, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't have any plans. So yeah. I set up
it's
in
kind
my
of a,
garage.
Probably a very freeing feeling.
A little bit, but scary, it was also right? Like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. And I also at that time had the realization of like, I'm not as good as I thought I was. I'm like, I need to like really get my shit together. And the only thing I could think to do is like, well, like within a month, all the money I saved up, I thought like $800 was going to like somehow like sustain me, and that was gone.
Right.
And then, you know, so I was just like, well, I'm going to set up my kit upstairs, and every morning I'm going to wake up, I'm going to go on a run, which I hate running, but it was still like, do something you hate in the morning.
Yeah. Therapeutic.
So I'd go do that, you know, not be able to breathe by the end of it, run back to the house, shower, and then just sit behind the kit. And I'm like, I'm just going to keep playing. And I was not good at like going out to go meet people. You know, that was, I was so anxious about that stuff because it was just like, just a lot of, putting a lot of pressure on myself to like do this whole thing, you know?
And yeah.
But that was really hard, the networking and stuff too. And so that whole first year was kind of like figuring that out. And like the first week in town, I did get a call from, you know, people come through the woodwork. I had a buddy who knew me from when I was a kid back in my hometown. And he was there. He's like, hey, dude, I need you. I got a gig this weekend with this guy. He'll be over at your place to like rehearse, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's all I knew. So he shows up. And he was like asking me for charts, and I'm like, I've never written a number chart in my life. It was all, you know, it's like, okay, here we go. Like, but I guess it's like, you know, and that's why you kind of be naive. So you're like, everything that comes your way, you're like, you don't care if you look stupid or if it's just like, you're just like a failure. And sometimes it's like, it's part of the process, man.
Yeah.
Fail quick, learn quick, you know?
Totally. Dude. Yeah. fail over and over. Mm-hmm. But like, get yourself in a position where you can fail safely. That's real. Yeah. That's huge.
Or no one knows that you're doing it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah, true. I just want to circle back to one thing really quick, because you said something that I wanted to ask about, and that was, you said, well, I realize I'm not as good as I thought I was. What was it that brought you that realization?
I think just, I'm trying to remember. There was definitely like a gig or two where I played for some people and I was just like, man, I can't like push a band a little bit. Like I'm not really good at driving. In terms of being here, I'm like, it's not a big band, or it's not like a worship team or some shit, or any of the gigs I was doing back home. Like I'd never played any country, or just played that more just kind of like real just meat and potatoes kind of playing. So I just moved here and I was just like, man, I'm just like, I can't play that. You know, I'd never played any rock or country. And the most stuff you kind of get asked to play here is rock and country.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, I got to do my best, like, bullshit rock and country till I can, like, actually make it believable a little bit. So again, you just kind of say yes to that stuff and you go in, and I was just like, man. And also the realization of, like, I'm not getting any calls yet. It's like, you know, if people knew I was in town and, like, say I was doing really well or was good enough, I would be able to look at what I'm doing and that would reflect it. And so I had to really tell myself, like, hey man, you're not busy this year. You have like two shows, you know, two gigs, and you're just, every time your phone goes off and you get a call, you're just like, I would just say yes. Cause I was like, I didn't want to ask how much it was at the time. This is so bad to say that. Cause I just, it's against everything I believe in, but you're just desperate. It's like, hey man, I got a gig. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm down. And like, I'm like, yeah, let me check my calendar. Just like, nothing. It's like, I can fucking do the gig, man. Yeah. Like, I'm just like desperate.
Because it is a gig and you don't know where that's going to go.
Yeah, I don't care. Right. And whew, that first year too, that first year, man, there was some sketchy gigs I did. Playing with some just random ass country like artists that you'll never hear about. Just find yourself in some weird places and just going like, fuck me, dude. Like, this is crazy. Man. Just get home, play the gig and get home. Yeah. You know, sometimes.
I have done myself some of those.
Yeah. I feel like every musician's kind of like,
Yeah, well, my favorite is the is
try not to cry.
You know? Is well, and you, I mean, you know, now it's like the concept that I know you're familiar with. We must all be familiar with this point. It's whenever they say like, yeah, you know, we're gonna go do such and such, and the pay is not guaranteed, but like, no, but the, it's turnout based, but the turnout's gonna be awesome. Like, and that
I was just like,
I'm like, oh. Yeah. I heard that one before, like, about 10,000 times. Yeah. I'm like, that doesn't mean shit to me. Oh yeah, man, it's gonna be 250 people there. Yeah. Like, it's gonna be great. I'm like, yo, what is my guarantee? Because I'm not going to freaking Harlan, Kentucky. Not to reference a real gig. It's very specific.
Yep. Lots of name names.
Yeah. Look at the camera. To turn around and be like, wow, cool. I made $5.
Mm-hmm.
That. In no way happens.
And you're just exactly playing for like the other bands watching you. That's it.
Right.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yep.
But man, there's a little bit of camaraderie in that too.
There is.
You know, as long as it's like, but it, I mean, that's the other thing though. Like, you got to tell yourself too. Like, at least for me personally, I was like, man, I also have to make a decision because, like, no matter what, I have to make money, you know, and I have to, you know, I want to do this for a living.
Right.
But if certain things aren't kind of like clicking by a certain time, I have to like shift and be real with myself. And that's a scary conversation to have with yourself too. It's like, man, on the safe side, I need to say, maybe what if I'm not good enough? You know? And I don't know if that's necessarily healthy to say, but like I had to ask myself.
I think it is. I'm sure we've all had that.
Yeah. Cause it's like, again, I'm naive. So like, I don't want to be at a certain phase of life and kind of like doing it a certain way. And that was just me personally, you know, I was just like, but I'm just so intense again with it. It's like, and it wasn't like an extreme thing of like even quitting music. It was more just like, maybe I'm not going to be touring a certain way I want to or playing for this. So maybe I need to like look at it a different way. And for me, it was also just going in on my strengths too. And what helped was like, you know, I grew up in a singing family. So I was like, again, like moving there with not much going on makes you go, okay, how can I make this work? And it's like, man, maybe you should start singing more again. And it's like, I hated doing it, but I was like, it's like, maybe you should lean into that. Yeah. And it's like,
I was going to say, you said earlier, really better.
Press like, your advantage.
Oh. Good voice.
Yeah, use what you got, man. And that's the thing. I think most of my life, I wanted to be like this drummer's drummer. And
yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be the dude that, you know, it's just like singing and drummer, this and that, or like get called for this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, it's like, hey, man, you're not in the situation to be like making some of those bargains. Like, this is what you got and you need to like lean into it. And ever since then, you know, I'm so glad I did that. Mm-hmm. But also like moving here makes you decide quicker about things. It's like, I'm desperate. I need to like, whatever I put my time into, I need to make sure it's like, you know. Mm-hmm.
Dude, there is nothing like desperation to help you
it's get essential,
really
man.
Creative.
It's essential. Dude, being scared to death is so important.
Oh my God, I can't recommend it enough.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's because it's hard to synthesize that.
Mm-hmm.
It really, like if you work really hard, you can get yourself in that mindset, but there's nothing like going into a situation where you're like, this is sink or swim, like burn the boats kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, well, if I don't make this work, I'm in trouble. Like, I don't make rent. I played with this group with a guy. He wasn't on the gig at the time. He took a break for this. I went on this on the road and played this festival with this.
Right on.
This guy, Jacob Zichelli. He's this incredible cellist.
You're playing drums with a cellist?
Well, he wasn't there for this. He ordinarily played with, they actually just had a bassist come in and fill in for him. But he is this phenomenal virtuoso. In the words of my friend Noah Needleman, he said, maybe not best cellist in the world, but certainly top five.
Producer Noah Needleman?
Yeah.
Plays with Brett Young?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know Noah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
small town, man.
Yep. Yeah. So Noah's younger brother, Jeremy, is one of my best friends. So.
Okay, cool. Right on.
But Jacob played for Rush. On their when they had their like symphonic thing going on that tour.
Holy shit.
And he purposefully blew all the money that he made on that tour.
Told the story.
Because he's that's right, I did. I forgot. He did it because he's like, I need to stay hungry.
Man, I thought I was extreme with that approach.
Yeah, like, and that's why he's as good as he is.
I mean, like, maybe you can invest a little bit of it.
Like,
you
know, he's like nah.
NFT or something.
Yeah, or buy some gear with it.
Bro, well, I mean maybe he
you're
did.
Just throwing it out the window.
Well, I mean, like he probably made some great purchases, but he ran himself out of money in order to back himself into that corner. I'm like, God, I love the balls of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's so good.
It's hard though, because the older you get, you need consistency, and that kind of translates a little bit to comfort, you know, the older you get. So it's like, how do you maintain the discomfort in the right ways, but still kind of like put yourself up in a way the older you get, where you're still kind of like addressing like needs outside of just being a drummer,
right?
Just being like an actual human, you know, taking care of yourself,
and right?
That's a whole other like
that's so interesting.
Conversation.
Yeah. I just pictured like walking on like a, you know, those tightrope walkers where it's like they wobble, but that's sometimes like they need to wobble a little bit
to
kind of calibrate how they can walk straight across and be comfortable.
Absolutely,
right? Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing is those guys, they've done tests, like they actually wobble the same amount of times as amateurs. But they actually do it faster.
Interesting.
So their corrections are just happening like, at a faster pace.
Fail quicker.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, it's so back good. To that same
everyone's
exact
failing.
Thing.
People are just, people, you can just get really good at it. Yep. You know?
That's life. We figured it out. We
got
it.
Yep.
Figure out the small adjustments. That is true, though, because it's like, you wish it didn't work that way sometimes. You wish it was like, I wish it didn't require for the whole like fucking building to be burning for me to be like, oh, I better get this done.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also, it's kind of like trying to almost like grow out of that phase at some point, you know, where it's just like a daily habit. It's tough, man, trying to do that too. Cause it's like, man, it's good for me. But once it gets you into a place of consistency, maybe even for a short time, it's like, okay, now I don't have to run around like the building's on fire, at least for now.
Yeah.
Maybe I can like use this break in that chaos to like, you know, start some other things that can grow and hopefully be resilient enough when I get back into the shit storm.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that, you know, day by day, week, month, by year, whatever, you know, that you can kind of like, you know, it's, I love that kind of talk.
Yeah.
I really do.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's just being resilient, you know, especially like, and I will say, man, I've seen some people who move here and they're comfortable. They're talented, but they're comfortable. And I got to say, I've never been the best dude in the room. I feel like more like the turtle in the hair kind of situation, but I've just been really intense with what I love to do to the point of just sometimes not in the healthiest way, you know, that tends to like translate into some like relationships and you neglect some things and it's like, fuck, okay, maybe I need to also work on being a better human. You know?
Yeah.
Just like,
it's a balance.
You know, that's really hard for me. I'm like either 0 or 100 with stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm doing something, I'm like, well, this is, you know, it's just like fixed on that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always healthy, you know, but it's also trying to like, to me, that's the only way to do it, man. Just move here and just like, just fucking go. Like I had the bank calling me while I'm walking on stage to play gigs. That's stressful because I'm like, I need this track rig gear, you know, for these gigs. And so I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Like Rich Redman, there was like a post he made and he's like, man, he's like, max out the credit card. And I was like,
dude,
I remember thinking about that. I'm like,
just do it.
Like, thank God I finally paid it off, but it took me like 5 years.
Yeah.
And like, holy shit, I remember at one point just being so broken, just so scared, not questioning it at all, just being like, hey, it's part of the process, but freaking out, man.
Yeah.
And just being like, I'm about to go play this gig for $200, which at the time is like, you know, for a lot of people, that's like, hey, that's a good.
That's not bad.
Yeah. That's not bad, man. It's like, but I'm about to make $200. That's going to be gone. Literally as I'm playing it note by note.
Yeah, right. Yep.
The bank's calling me 3 times a day for the gear I'm using. And I'm just like, and I'm like not talking to my family or anyone because I'm just freaking out. I'm like, I can't come to them until I'm like, got my shit together, you know? And just like, they like a year, like, hey, like, are you alive? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And I'm just like, always
coming
like,
out, of the
out
trenches.
Every week. Yeah, just
oh
like,
my God.
You know, but it's like, that's why it's not healthy, you know? But I'd get mad when people would say like, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to be healthy. And I'm like, fuck that, man. Like, you know, but that was just me. But it's not, I acknowledge it's not the healthiest approach.
Yeah.
And so I finally had to take time to like go, you need to like address some things and take care of those a little bit. But for the first couple of years, it's like, that's just a luxury. I don't have time to like really address how I'm feeling mentally. Like, I just got to keep going, you know? And but that kind of stuff kind of just gets me pumped thinking about it. I don't know, it's a little fucked up, but.
Dude, there's.
I love that.
There's a guy, I believe his name is Zach Talander. He's a Olympic weightlifter, and he's got a great YouTube channel. If you're at all interested in weightlifting or fitness, dude,
I'm not in that, but like the dudes who do it are pretty inspiring. So I'll listen to him.
He's got a video you should check out called "Toxic Champions Mindset."
Yeah,
and it maybe shouldn't be inspirational, like you're saying. Like maybe it's not the healthiest thing,
man,
but it inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thing is. Those guys, like when you look at the very peak, they do have what a lot of people would consider a toxic mindset. And they're I think
my girlfriend's gonna love hearing this part.
Oh, this is this is here's the thing about that. I believe I'm gonna say this for the record. I believe there is a time and place for that. I think I think when you're building something, it's okay to have some of that and engage that on purpose.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's not that's a way to live your too. Life forever, but no. for a season.
It's almost like you're activating, like it's here and you're choosing to
engage
with it, as you said, but it can't be all in every
No, you can't keep that shit going forever. It's not you got to address it.
You become an unbalanced person, but there is, you can go, you know what? For right now, next 6 months of my life, I'm going balls to the wall on this thing because I have to break through this wall. I have to just demolish this goal. And then after that, I can be a person again. Like, okay, great.
And then it's like 6 months goes to a year, goes to two.
Well, that's five. That's where the balancing act comes in.
As you said, like the reality starts to set in. It's like, am I, because we should all have those goals and dreams, but at a certain point, it's like, well, am I cut out for it? Like, is it, am I not getting the gigs? Like, why is this not producing those results? It's good to have that introspective, but it just sounds like you've had.
Well, I feel like it's something, and that's not even something like you ever really say, like at some point I'm it's like, I'm never actually going to quit. You know that, but it's you just have those conversations because it's almost again like that fire of like, well, then if you feel that way, then fucking like figure it out then, man. Like, let's go, you know? So for me, it's just like, again, I'm either 0 or 100. Again, so it's like, I can't have like a happy 75, you know, it's like,
and you know
something,
what?
So, you know,
you get more done with 0 or 100, you know what? And that's the thing, honestly, because 0 is ultimate rest.
Yeah.
And 100 is ultimate productivity. And like, if you can, and Tim Ferriss talks about that. He's like, don't be a simmering 6. Don't just sit there like, I'm kind of like, just like, either boil or don't. Like, stop. Don't just fuck around with it. Like, get it done or stop.
Have you guys ever noticed you'll take some time off for like a day or two? This is where I've finally, like, the past year been like, I'm seeing the benefits of balance now, and I've convinced myself it's worth trying to figure out. But it's like, man, there's some days where it's like I'll take some time off from this, give my brain some space to just, like, you know, breathe.
Yes.
And I come back and I feel so much better. And I have to like tell myself, hey man, you're not the smartest person in the world. You don't have this all figured out. So maybe you need to acknowledge that your intensity can come, you know, it's worth trying to find a middle ground so you can just have like a half day of this.
Or
100%. Or just an hour of something, you know. You don't have to just be like, well, this is what I'm doing for the week. You can like kind of shift. And
intensity is, when you're pursuing something, it's just like any fire. Like you're burning fuel.
Yeah, but in return, you need to refuel those other fires too, which is good. You know,
if you take a day and just like recover yourself. It's been a while. It's been years, but before we moved out here, we went camping. My wife and I went camping with her family.
Oh yeah,
it was like 3 days, no phone, except for the one time we went into this small town to grab a couple supplies we needed. I would just use it to check if I had anything important, any texts or whatever.
So it's not real camping. Damn.
Right. Yeah. But that was like 5 minutes of a 3 day period. The rest of it was just like running around, cooking everything over a fire and like living in a tent. And
not intense enough.
Yeah, not. needs more intensity.
Hunter gatherer.
You don't have just a knife and a loincloth. You're doing it, dude.
Nate is a certified glamper. That's for the record.
Yep.
That's what I just thought.
Yes. Yeah. It was the best. Yeah. It was the best. I'm like, cool. Being totally disconnected, totally just like,
It's so important.
This is amazing. Wake up and, I mean, you're not really supposed to do this, but we let the fire burn all night because it was our area was very safe to just let that happen.
All the campers everywhere in the bar probably. You were glamping.
Right, yeah.
He had Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Walmart parking lot. Just
So I think it is, well, I'm going to pose this question. Like, do you think it's a direct relationship? Like, whereas like the harder you go in something, you need more of a break. So like if you're staying up till 4 a.m., if you're going super hard on whatever it is, then you take like 2 days off versus to your point, like kind of simmering, having breaks throughout all that, but then you're not advancing to where you want to be. Like you're the car's going so slow.
I guess you kind of be the judge of that and find out if it's worth it. For me, it's definitely like, you know, but it's like, I, at least at this phase of my life, I'm like, man, you know what? I have a little more consistency right now. I think I need to work on the balance part now. Yeah. But I remember like, again, like first moving here, it's like, man, like, I don't, like, until I get this thing working, I don't feel like I have a right to do anything else. You know, you know what I mean? Like, because I moved here, you know, like, I don't want to waste time. Like, what am I doing here if I'm just, like... But again, there were some times where I was like, man, maybe there were some days where it's like, should have gone to that friend's party. Or should go hang out, you know?
Sure.
Because again, it still is beneficial. And it's so healthy for you. So I had to learn how to, like...
Yeah.
I had to kind of teach myself to kind of do some of those things a little bit. And in return, it did help. So it's like...
Yeah, you know, that's great.
But again, I think it all just goes with whatever, you know, your phase of life too. You know, I feel like if some people did it exactly how I did it, they would like hate it and it might not work.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone kind of finds their own little, like I think of every musician here as like a plant growing in some concrete. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you can find that sunlight, man, I'm like, I'm hanging out this other crack of concrete going like, yeah, man, you're like, you figured it out.
I love
you that. Photosynthesizing too.
It's like, hey, man, we made it to the sunlight a little bit. Like, fuck yeah. And if you're not, like, keep growing, man. Like, just
reminded me that movie Sausage Party, right? Sausage Party.
A movie you've seen?
Yeah, that's what that was. You've seen that?
I have not seen that.
So I think it's the funniest movie I've ever seen.
They like animate a grocery store, pretty much. That's
hilarious. But that's what that reminded me of.
They're all just cheering each other on, trying to get out of there.
But it's super vulgar and sexual.
I do recall that I was
they're making a sequel. I just heard it's been like a while.
I think too they like canvassed it as like a family film originally, so like people went to they didn't like put any previews out, or I think the previews that did come out, it looked like a fun
like
family
like a cute,
and it did that on purpose,
like animated.
So these families show up to this fucking movie and they're just like the opening.
There's like an orgy at the end.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's, dude, it's, oh, horrific. My gosh. If my,
so funny. Oh,
those parents probably had so many like questions from their kids when they took them out of that place.
What's that you said? You want to learn how to play drums, but you don't know where to begin? Let me humbly suggest to you that you head on down to Music Lab Nashville and you talk to their crew of fantastic teachers and you jump on in and start your music journey right there. Don't want to learn drums? Want to learn guitar? Ukulele? Mandolin? Trumpet? Vocals? Keys? Sitar? Maybe not sitar, but all the other stuff for sure. Visit nashville.musiclab.co to learn more and sign up for a free trial lesson.
I want to go back to, I really like what you were saying about like playing those gigs where, you know, you had the band calling you and like you realizing like the money you're making is literally just like diminishing every song, right?
Yeah, not really in the what's the green or the net positive. Really,
yeah, I think that's, I know for me that's super relatable.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of drummers, like you take gigs, and I remember just going to get pizza after the gig, and like there goes the money I just made.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like
yeah,
that's tough, but that's kind of like along that track of to work, you know.
Or even like going, I remember like going downtown to play Broadway.
Like, yeah. It's like paying for parking alone.
Yeah, paying for parking. It's like, well, I'm hungry now and I'm obviously going to get some food on the way home because it's like 2 a.m.
Yes.
You know, the only thing open is Cookout. So I'm going to go there and get an Oreo shake.
God,
what's up?
Cookout.
M&M, baby.
Oh, M&M, what's yours?
Oh, banana pudding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what we need to start asking guests.
Like, oh, your cookout
favorite
order.
Cookout shake. Yeah. What's your cookout order?
Man,
yeah.
It'd be a double cheeseburger, hush puppies. Because I was so tired, too. Yeah. I just played 3 hours. I'm like, you don't give a shit about your diet.
No.
So I get like a double Oreo
shake. It doesn't even count at that
point.
It's
a reward,
too. You burned off so many.
That's the other part. Mentally, like, you're not doing great. You're tired as shit. You're fun. You're like on a high because you know, had a great gig. And you're, you know, you got to play with your buddies. But at the same time, you're also not eating great.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, there's nothing really in this line of work that's like in your favor for like
constant
health.
L's.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, there's not a lot of it that's like, oh no, man, do this for a living. It's really great for your body. You know, it's like, my knees hurt, dude, from Broadway. Like carrying all your cymbals and all your shit after that gig.
If we were to write out like a job description for being a full-time drummer, nobody would be in that.
No, that's the thing. You gotta like, be a little naive, man.
It
doesn't make sense at all. And when it's really good, you know, when there's a musician in a really great situation, it's like a normal kind of like job benefits. It's in like a normal job situation. So it's like a musician's like peak kind of like, oh my God, this doesn't get better than this. Is like,
right.
Someone's basic like,
yeah.
Oh, like, you know, like I stock grocery shelves and that's like what I do. And it's like,
right.
So it's, you know what I mean? So again, that's that whole kind of thing of like, I hate that cliche saying, but it's like, hey, you gotta fucking love it. Cause it's not
happiness.
When it sucks, it sucks. And when it's great, it's great. Mm-hmm. It's really never experienced like a medium, like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it's extremes,
woo, you know? And then also like, oh, this is, it's been a good year, you know?
So. Yeah. Mm. So I guess my question to go along with that is, do you remember like a gig where you were like, okay, now like I've kind of reached that next level, maybe financially, or just like you've felt maybe more established and more a gig that kind of gave you that confidence to keep going and that you kind of had moved here for the right reason?
I think when I was just paying my bills, when I'm after moving here for a little bit, because I mean, back in Cincinnati, like all of us were doing that too as musicians. It was, it's a little less intense there, you know, like you could play a wedding gig and you're kind of like, you're in college, you're like, oh, sweet, I'm covered.
Yeah.
You know, but I think once I was able to kind of like pay my bills doing it, you know, that was like, again, my bills weren't like crazy or anything, but like minus the bank calling me. But I was like, man, I'm covering my rent. I'm covering my bills. You know, I'm living with my buddies. I love the band I'm playing with downtown. Like, you know, and I'm going on the road on some weekends with some of my other friends' projects. Like, I'm really happy. And that took like 2 or 3 years to kind of get some kind of footing here and figure out how to like handle certain situations and and finally be in a place to say, you know what? Again, it's like I can change my mindset. And one of those was like a revelation of like, okay, maybe I can start saying no to some stuff now. And that was a really cool feeling. And that was like, one of my buddies told me that and he's like, man, at this point, like, cause you move there, you're desperate. And then you get the ball rolling and then you realize you're almost too busy, but not in the best ways. Mm-hmm. And some of the gigs are like, man, why? And then once you start asking yourself, why am I putting my time into that? That's when you're like, oh, that's a luxury too. For even me just be able to think about, like,
take a step back.
Take a step back and be like, man, I don't want to do that. Cause that's going to like, I just don't want to. So I'm going to be more available for this stuff and do this stuff better. That was a revelation too.
Yeah.
So I think those kind of two moments for me where I was like, I finally feel confident here. And then honestly, getting the Parker, you're playing with them. I don't even want to call it a gig because it doesn't feel like one. It's just,
I don't definitely want to go into that story, you know, that transition.
That's definitely been another kind of level to that too. Getting to check off a lot of new things off the list this year has definitely given me a little bit of confidence in some of those things too. But definitely when you're like, man, I'm paying my rent and I got a little extra tip money, like you get a little wad of cash on your dresser, you're like, this is kind of fun. You know, I can do this for a couple of years and, you know, and keep trying to make things move. But I was like, man, I can do this every week, you know, like once or twice and just like, then go home and record and like practice and work on the other stuff I care about.
I think it's a really healthy mindset. Just like celebrate. Like the wins don't have to be major wins. You know, it's not like, I'm not going to be happy until I'm playing in a stadium. I'm not going to consider myself a drummer.
Right.
Versus like, I can pay rent, like you said, you know, and like for us in this podcast, I feel like it's pretty similar. We're starting to get more attention, sponsors, whatever. It's like, okay, we can start to, you know, recoup some of those expenses.
Yeah.
That is a win within itself.
Oh, and you got to celebrate them too. Cause even like the smaller, even like the micro wins. Cause I mean, like no one else will fully understand it for you, but individually, like we all get it, but like, even little things like, I mean, one of my first gigs where I was like, you know what? It was like my first year in town. I was like, I'm going to have every song charted out. I just remember being in that mindset too. Yeah. And I'm going to make sure every song is charted really well. And I'm just going to like, make sure I say, like you just set small goals, even gig by gig. And it's like, okay, I just got this gig. I don't feel great about it. This dude seems sketchy, but hey, you know, it's like, you know, my buddy threw my name out. So it's almost like you're doing it more for your friend as an appreciation for like other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to show up. I'm going to play every song like the record. Because when I moved here too, that wasn't like really my mindset either. Like back home, it was like
original stuff.
Yeah. Don't try to like do that. Yeah. So moving here, it was like, and people are like, hey, I want this right here like that. And I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Like, all right. Now that's a new goal. So you just start adding a checklist of gig by gig of like, no matter who you're playing with or what it is, every show, it's just like, man, I want to be better this weekend at this, or I want to be a better hang this weekend, or like
picking out those, extracting those things from every
moment.
Yeah, and
the gig doesn't have to be like the best thing in the world. It's all the fucking same, dude. Even when I'm actually like doing less stuff per se with playing with Parker than what I did on other gigs. Like just some of my friends, like when I would be running like backing tracks and like designing the show and doing all this extra stuff. But man, like no matter what the gig is, it's the same motions. It really, it's just like, it's doing the exact same thing. It's like, okay, well for this gig, it's like I'm playing my buddy's like hometown in Decatur, Illinois in the middle of cornfields, but we're running backing tracks. He's expecting me to design the intros for some of the stuff and I'm running the show. So I don't give a fuck if there's two people in there or three or like I'm playing a fucking stadium. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit. It's the exact same motion. And it's like the crowds almost don't really matter. It's like literally like, cause you just, the people you're playing with are like all that really fucking matter in those situations.
Yeah.
You know, and, but it's like, it's all the same. It's like, if I can do this well in this situation, you know, and that's important. It's like, if you can't, it's like, okay, then maybe I have to be realistic. Like, I think I want this and I should have this now, but it's like, I need to wait until I can do it in this setting. Cause if I can't do it in this like kind of basic setting, then how am I expected to do it when there's like
more pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not even, the role hasn't changed. It's just, there's more people expecting you to do everything right. Yeah. You know, there's really no room for it to go wrong. Love, and if it mindset. Does, you better be a little like, you know, like,
it reminds me of like during the pandemic, you know, like the professional athletes that had to play basically empty stadiums, you know, but it's like, they're not going to not play. They're not going to play worse. Like they have to still, you know, it's a competitive. Thing,
yeah.
Honestly, that was the weirdest thing I have ever seen in my life. Watching, not I don't watch baseball, but like whenever I would be in a bar and like the fake people out
the
there,
fake
like,
people, yeah.
Just no.
Wait, where was this?
They, all the baseball games, they put like fake people. These like cardboard cutout people.
Why even do that? Just keep it empty.
That's just creepy, bro. Because you're going to see like one person out there at one point. You're like, ah, my God, what is that? That's a real guy out there. Yeah. I hate this.
Yep.
So there were two dudes that Parker was working with. It's kind of like a company where they'll work with bands. You know, they'll do a lot of backing track stuff, help design shows and help them like, basically if you need a drummer or a full band or anything like that. And they found me on Instagram coincidentally, which you don't really ever think about anyone. I don't, at least I never thought about people actually looking at my account.
Well, but, I think that's how we connected, funny enough.
Oh, was it really? Right.
There's another reason why you should follow Nashville Drummers Podcast.
Hmm. Which is a good time to plug.
Nashville Drummers Podcast on Instagram.
There we go. I was waiting for your voice to
that was nice.
Settle in.
There's a drummer, dude, he's been like really killing it lately too, named Andrew Grasso. Grasso?
Yeah.
He's playing with Gale right now, which is cool. Because
he's a pearl guy.
You don't normally see a lot of dudes playing with like major pop acts out of Nashville, and he's fucking killing everybody right now, dude.
Yeah.
I think he's like pretty much in Europe all year most of the time right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
But dude,
he seems awesome.
I haven't personally met the guy either, but we both kind of got, you know, like I started playing with Parker at the same time he started playing with Gale. And I just remember like, and I think it was through the same dudes that got me on the Parker gig, got him on the Gale thing.
Yeah.
So it was cool to kind of watch him just like fucking crush, man. He's
dude.
He's running with it, man. It's cool. It's fun, man. I love seeing people like
writing that name down. You were familiar. I wasn't.
Yeah.
Never met the guy too, but again, that's similar timing from, you know, the mutual people we met. And those two dudes too, I forgot to mention that company was called like Built by Payne. This guy named Matt Payne who runs it. When they found me on Instagram, they also, I want to like make it clear that they came to Broadway to go see me play too.
Mm-hmm.
So for any musicians that like moved to Nashville and they're younger, or like maybe they left music school and they're feeling kind of hot and they're like, I'm too good for this and this. And I think sometimes people think they're too good for Broadway.
Yeah.
The current situation I'm in now is partially because two dudes came to like, for, if you're not busy, you don't have a right to be picky, you know? So if you move here, be open-minded.
Man.
And it's like, at the end of the day, if you're going to be a musician, you should be able to like say, yeah, I can do this gig. Go down there, say yes to the 3 hour, whatever. If you think it's bullshit, it's whatever. You're still going to get something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They came to go see me play. And granted, the first couple auditions they put me on, it was great because I didn't get them. But that was great because I would still be like, okay, cool. Yeah. I still got to keep moving, go downtown, go play.
Yeah, that humbled
do
you.
Do whatever shit. Yeah, it was great, dude.
Not that you weren't humbled, but just continue that fire.
No, but it was just nice to know how to like, just kind of handle, not necessarily failure, just someone to say, hey, like you weren't the right person for this, and to sit there and let people make a decision on you. I hadn't done that in a while. So to like, most of the stuff I was doing was through friends. So that was like really healthy to go through that and be like, well, third person in a row, they said no. So it's like, you know, and they would tell me stuff too, like, hey man, tweak your snare for this gig, try this out.
Hmm.
And that's then the really Parker helpful. Thing came along and they gave me a little bit of advice and again, to being open-minded. Like I didn't come in there with like, no, that's not my sound. That's not how I do it. They said, hey man, you're playing an aluminum, like Yamaha recording snare. It sounds great, but it's too high and it's not the right snare. Find some just like 6.5 or 5-inch, like 14x5 maple snare, mid-tune it, get a bigger stick, get some brighter cymbals. And that's exactly what I did.
Huh.
So I walked into the Parker gig with that. And granted, as times progressed with that, with playing with them, like the setups changed a little bit and the stuff softened because I've kind of been able to fit a little bit better for what they need. And but being open-minded, man, they told me that stuff and they said, hey, let them know that you sing too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, cool. So I did that, didn't hear from him for a few weeks. And coincidentally, he called me when I was about to go play a gig on Broadway for my friend, that band I'd play with all the time down there.
Yeah.
But I was still like, hey, man, can I call you back? Like, I got to go play a gig. And I didn't want to do that, but I was like, I got to go. So it's like, you know, priority. Yeah. And then the next morning I called him and kind of got things hashed out about, you know, what the year would look like. And it all happened really fast. But
yeah.
I had to make a bunch of calls. But it was fun, too, because I got to call some other friends and get them on some gigs that I had. And
that's always fun.
Right? That, you know, paid my bills when I was in town.
Yeah.
And that's so invaluable, you know. So it was all around a really cool situation. Mm-hmm. You know?
So you mentioned that they found you on Instagram. Like, were you already putting a lot of effort into content, or was that just
not
like
to be like found for gigs? I was just like, right. It was for me. It was just great practice. Like, I think maybe a lot of people can agree to like record yourself, you know, and just listen back and be, oh, this sounds cool. Maybe I'll share it and just kind of like show what you're doing in this virtual little room for everybody. I love Instagram for musicians. It's been so great. Mm-hmm. We can all kind of feature what we do. And, but yeah, just covers or me just playing. I was just like, I'm just going to post me because I was still worried about not being like the most trendy kind of drummer or really or anything like that, but really kind of leaning into it. It's like, if I like it, I'm going to share it. So I was kind of learning how to be secure in that too.
And, yeah.
But they saw something on there. I mean, I would go live when I played downtown too for fun and just so my friends could watch, you know, just fucking around, man. Just, you know, just having fun.
Yeah.
They saw something they liked and it was really cool. They were determined to get me on something. So I appreciate that.
You've kind of shared your story about people finding you through YouTube. Right. And it's like, I mean, of course, they probably saw talent, right? Like, obviously, you can play. That has to be part of it. But just, I feel like people seeing your true character, like that authenticity, maybe it's not the most polished videos or, you know, you going live on Broadway. Like, this guy's a cool dude. Like, he's very down to earth. He's doing his thing. Like, I think that's valuable.
Yeah, dude.
As well,
I mean, the time that goes into making, like, that's a hard thing, too. There's a lot of, the expectation. I'm sure you talked with some drummers of, like, having to make content, having to film. And that's, quite honestly, man, that side of things just, like, it drains me. And I would only do it from time to time. And I'm like, I just want to go play. I just, like, I don't care if anyone knows me. I just want to, like, just be a working musician, you know, and kind of hopefully navigate it to where I can do exactly what I want, play with the people I want. But,
yeah.
It's like, I don't care if anyone like never hears about me. I just like, I just want to work. You know, I just want to play, especially after the past couple of years.
Sure.
And that whole, if that whole content side of things, just like, it's just, and I talk about so many buddies about that too. They're like, man, I just don't want to put in the time to do this. And it's like, that's okay. So I'm just trying to lean into that.
It's a lot of time. Cause I am.
It is, man.
I mean, I put out a lot of content.
Yeah. It's and, cutting all that up. And,
yeah. It's a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just not patient enough too.
So I think that should always sort of be second. Like, you have the right mindset of like, well, I just want to play. Like, I want to play drums first and foremost. If I can create some cool content alongside of that, that's great.
Yeah.
But it's not like, oh, I need to be this trendy drummer on social media first. You know, it's like a backwards
mindset. That's not the best excuse too, because there are some dudes who they're doing way more than I do, and they still have time to like, you know, video everything and do like a tour vlog and all that. So I'm just like,
yeah, it just depends. You never know. Like, a lot of people have like,
maybe I'll get to that point.
A whole team doing video. Like, I have, I'll hire people to film it. I steal all the editing.
Cause I'm just thinking, like, where do you guys find the time to do? And just like being an adult too. Like,
kind of process. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get into that at some point or try to shape it in a way where I find it valuable. But
yeah,
I feel like I still have a lot more experience to gain before I can just start like sharing like my thoughts, even sometimes or opinions on stuff.
Right.
You know? Cause I remember like the dudes I look up to, I was like, when they talked, I'd shut up. Cause it's like, cause I mean like everything, there's nothing I need to say. I can just listen. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I kind of want to maybe one day get to a fraction of that. So if I
do drop my opinion,
it's actually
mindset.
Of some value, you know?
Yeah. I think the negative aspect of social media is that we're all just kind of screaming, right? We're all having an opinion.
Everyone's
look at me, look at me,
right,
look at this,
answer.
Look at that. But like to you, what you just said, like just take a step back and listen.
Yeah. I almost want to like withdraw more from that stuff a little bit because of the pressure to do it. Or like filling out like endorsement stuff. You know, it's like how many, I'm like, man, this is a losing battle because I'm not like a drummer's drummer. I just need help. Like when I call, I need like a cracked cymbal replaced.
Yeah.
You know, with a company that'll respond. So I'm like, I'm really not asking for much. And so that whole thing too, I was like, I'm like, I'm not this and I don't want to be this. I just like,
but
I like
you're
doing
the right thing. And that comes from my experience, you know, with being at a brand like Pearl. Ultimately, it comes down to the gig you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the other stuff isn't as important. So take us back. So you got the call, right, from Parker. And then kind of what was the next step after that?
From that point, it was actually a little nerve wracking because the main guy who brought me on, he said at this point, like, you have the gig, you don't have to worry about that, you know. There was no kind of like a week later, hey man, sorry this fell through or some crit, you know. It was a little bit of trust because they're saying, hey, call everyone you know and everything you got for the year and cancel it. And that was tough for me because all those people I'd been working with for a couple of years, and they're like my friends and people, you know, we all made money together on the road and we loved like playing with each other creatively and everything. But he said, call everything you have for the year, cancel it. He says, and I'll let you know when I have more information. And I'm like,
jeez.
And I'm trying not to be, I'm not trying to act like, man, I got to know. Okay. I'm not trying to, I'm saying, just trust him, relax. Cause I was pretty anxious about the whole transition and, and just having to call these people and say, just like, hey, I'm the whole, the whole year, you know, everything we had. No, yeah, call him, call that guy.
Yeah.
You know,
it's pretty surreal. Like,
it was a cool situation to do that. Yeah.
But like,
had that conversation and then finally heard from him. Again, he said, hey, this date you'll fly to Texas, you'll meet the guys, and then you'll rehearse for about 3 days. And then it was out right on the bus and right out to shows because they had like a full schedule. There really wasn't a lot of time to do it. Mm-hmm. And then so I remember walking in, I was like, I flew into Austin, stayed there that night, and then woke up and went to this rehearsal space and met all the guys in the band for the first time there, meet me for the first time. Some of them knew about the transition like 2 weeks before, I think. So it was all really fast for everybody.
Yeah.
So were you replacing a drummer? Like, were you kind of like the first touring drummer for this artist?
No, he's had a, the last drummer he had played with him for a long time and has that real cool, like Texas country kind of like touch. But I guess for what they wanted, they needed someone a little more like just like a Nashville kind of like hit a little harder, a little tighter, I guess, or whatever he was told, like, hey, like this is kind of what we need to do to kind of take the show this direction.
Cool.
I guess I was doing that and the singing part definitely helped. That's just like, if you can be a drummer and can just learn, like any drummer, listen to this. If you can learn to hold a note, you don't have to be a good singer to sing as a drummer.
Yeah.
If you can hold a note, I'll back off the mic now. If you can hold a note and just like chime in on the chorus, do the third above or below the guy, singers will be like, yes, thank you so much. Obviously, you know, try to grow from that, but like, if you're looking to, you know, be a little more valuable and you're in a town like this where there's so many guys who can kind of fill the seat of a lot of these gigs here, you know, per se, try to find something like that. Just like, and there's a couple drummers I've seen that I've talked to this year and told them like, hey, do this. They got a mic. They got like a cheap mic. They have it hooked up. You don't have to chime in on the gig at the time. Just whenever you feel comfortable, just they'll look back and be like, yeah, man. And you're good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yep.
It doesn't have to be like this huge thing that you do, but it definitely like is a little perk.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not that much of a commitment, really. Very low barrier to entry.
You don't have to be super involved with it.
Right.
Yeah. Low risk, very high rewards. Yeah.
I know. I can hit this note.
Absolutely.
Cool. This will be a boon to the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. I feel like probably most of us could. I mean, we're musicians.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
yeah, you should be able to, you know, try to at least hear harmony to some extent. Like most drummers, I feel like you should, or like, holy shit, you want to get good at that stuff. Buy a bass, start playing some bass. That helps with your pitch too. If you can like play some of these songs on bass too, you almost learn the drum part a little quicker sometimes because the drums aren't super hard in some of this stuff.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, and like, even tinkering on bass.
It's so healthy, man. It's so good for you.
It is. And it renews the perspective or gives you I think the proper perspective of what a bassist would want from a drummer.
Yeah, know what they're feeling when you're, you know, if you're a drummer who's like just not making it feel good, know what that feels like. And it's like, oh, okay. So when I've had nights where I'm just, it's something's not feeling good, the bass player's not loving it too. Like, this is what it felt like.
Oh,
you just want to call somebody and be like, man, I'm sorry about that one gig.
I get it now.
And, you know, I was playing like this and I understand now like how bored you must have been for this, you know.
Oh. Dude,
yeah, but again, like country music is a great little playground for that stuff sometimes. Mm. But on the other hand, I do wish that it's like if you're going to move here, expect to play a little bit of country. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to lean into it, great. If you don't, you know, find another route. But like that music is a great place to kind of learn like a lot of basics.
Yeah,
it's some
of that word playground. It really is. You know,
yeah, man. And that's what Broadway. Me and my buddies, the girl we were playing with all the time, her name is Rachel Horder. Like incredible singer. And it was me, a friend of mine named Seth Cook, who just moved to Los Angeles, actually. He was a killer producer here. Amazing player. I mean, incredible guitar player and singer.
Yeah.
And he just moved there. And a bass player named Brogan Dutcher.
Oh, nice.
And we'd play like Old Red a bunch. And it was so much fun. And we called that place the gym. Because sometimes we're like, man, like I'd rather be at home like shredding my stuff or working on other shit. Sometimes I necessarily don't want to go down there and play like 3 hours of this stuff. So like, if we're going to go down there, let's have some fucking fun.
Yeah.
Let's change it up a little bit. She had such great pockets. So we could like really mess around and go for shit. But it was like, we called it the gym. It's like, yeah. I'm going to go downtown and I'm going to work out for 3 hours. Yes. And if I, you know, it's a great way to keep your chops in order. There's a drummer named, he plays for Dustin Lynch. His name's, this is embarrassing. Billy something.
Yeah.
I'll see him down there sometimes. He's still playing. It's like, there's still a lot of drummers who are like, they're on killer gigs and they still go down there and play. Cause it's a great place to just like,
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. In fact, I'm gonna look and see if it's the same guy I'm thinking of.
I hate that I forget. Like, again, I'm so bad at that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Jake Summers does that, you know? I mean,
yeah, dude, it's a playground. Like, go down there and be like, I'm going to go. Cause it's again, there's always going to be bands playing down there. There's always going to be like tourists. If you want to just go play a gig, go on Broadway and just like, again, be open-minded. I feel like some people will move here and be like, oh, I'm not going on Broadway.
It's Billy Freeman.
Yeah, Billy Freeman.
Okay, yeah.
Billy
Joe
Freeman.
Yeah.
Or Dude, great player to watch, man. He's killer.
Yeah.
His kit sounds incredible, too. Mm. We were doing a show with Parker. It was like, I think it was called like one of these like Country Thunder festivals. And no, this is before him. But Dustin Lynch was still like the headliner. And so I got to kind of go stage side and, you know, see Billy. This is before I knew who he was, really. And sat behind the kid. And
yeah.
My God, dude. That kit sounds incredible. It's a Ludwig, I think he's playing. Oh, my God, dude. It was just, like, I still hear it. It was amazing. Yeah. And it's just fun when you hear people who just have their sound dialed in and they're just doing their thing right and they're doing it well. And he's one of those guys in town. To see that was just like, oh, man. It was fun, man. I didn't talk to him. I hate bothering, like, musicians I see on the road sometimes. But again, that's my whole point. Though, is he'll do some of that crazy stuff or some of those really great shows with Dustin, and then I'm assuming he'll just go downtown and play other stuff too.
Yeah.
So I wish more musicians who moved here were, and I think some are, but I know there's some people I think they kind of ride off Broadway a little bit. They think it's like, oh, I'm not gonna go down there and play 3 hours of this.
But I'm too,
like,
good for that. Yeah.
Man, go down there and just see what happens. And there might be some stuff where you're like, you know what? I actually suck at that. I mean, we need to work on this. For me, it was like how to keep a 3-hour set moving.
Yeah.
You know, even like little tricks like, okay, after like for the first like 5 songs, we're not going to stop, you know, and literally like as you hit the downbeat, you literally start playing the next song, and learning shit like that was super helpful. Man. And so Broadway to me is just like, it's a really great playground. And on top of that, you get paid to play.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of streets like that in the country, I think, that I'm aware of.
It's a pretty good gig. I mean,
you can actually, you know, again, cover your bill. Like, there's not a lot of streets like it, man.
No.
I'm really grateful for that street. Yeah. For sure.
I make a good living doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dude, there's just no place like that where it's like, man, I need to make some money. It's like, well, do you want to play for like 12 hours today downtown? Yeah. It's like, yeah.
You can.
Yeah. You want to play shifts?
I know those
downtown?
Guys who are just like doing freaking on triples.
See, there's so much work there. Oh, they literally call it shifts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's, exactly. That's how much work there is on that street.
Yeah.
I met a dude who played Broadway for a whole year, and he said, I'm going to make $100,000 doing it. Granted, if you broke down the amount of time he played in the hours, it's like less than minimum wage. But still, holy shit, the dude made $100,000 playing like 12 hours a day on Broadway, and he
playing
did
drums.
It.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can go that crazy, it's like, good for you, man.
If you get, I'm just going to say, if you get better gigs than that, it doesn't take triples to make that money. There are some shifts that, not all shifts down there are created equal.
No, dude. There's like places that we play, like Old Red, were really, the people who own those venues and those bars and how they run them.
Yep.
It's a huge difference.
Yep. And if you're playing with a band that knows how to get people to part with their money.
Yeah, man.
It's
a big part of it.
It is a different experience. You're like, oh yeah, these guys know how to get tips.
If you have an open mind and you just like, and you just don't care who you're playing with or what you're playing. You just want to play.
Yeah.
And you don't know what to do when you move to town. Just go down there, man.
100%.
And you're guaranteed to, you know, fill in for somebody and then get it's just never short of musicians down there.
Yeah. So. Okay. So you have covered an immense amount of ground here, but let's go into end zone questions. Is there anything playing the gig that you're playing that you would want to share advice wise with players coming to town, players who already are in town and are looking to move toward landing a gig or really solidifying a gig with an artist like that?
Yeah.
What gold nuggets can you give to those listeners?
Man, I think it's tough if you're a drummer who has like a serious identity about like your playing.
Yeah.
I guess mine is like playing for other people. So a lot of times when I'm asked to play a certain way or do something, I'm happy to do that. Because a lot of times I don't think I've been called specifically because I'm like John Bostwick. I'm called because I can, I work really hard to try to like, you know, cater to whoever I'm playing for.
Yeah. Even if it goes so you're kind against, of a chameleon, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, and not in the credit I should be given for that because there's some dudes that can really blend in certain things, but yeah. Just trying to cater to every player in a certain way because everyone's a little different and really doing what maybe like the music director wants. I think that's something that's helped too. I think I'm pretty easy to work with in most settings. And if someone's got an idea and they're like, hey man, we really want this. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know, really, really, I think an overall theme for all this is just be open-minded.
Yeah.
Like they were telling me like before, you know, auditioning for Parker, they were saying like, hey man, your snare's just not feeling this way. And I was like, well, it's been working for, I didn't go like, well, I've always had my snare tuned this way or this is like my workhorse and it's worked. So like, you know, fuck off. I was like, oh shit. Okay, cool. I think anyone who gives you the time of day and is willing to tell you something, especially here, take the fucking hand, man. Like that's huge. They'll save you a lot of time. And so for me, it's just being in any situation where they say, hey, we really want this sound, or can we do this kind of thing? Or can we like, it's got to feel like a little bit more like a little wider or a little tighter, being able to say, yeah, let's try to get that feel together. Being able to do those things, I think is really valuable. So I'd really tell people like have an ego in the right ways, but really try to just, when someone asks something of you, make sure it doesn't affect your inner like artist or inner creative on that instrument as well.
Right.
Know that you're on that gig to do what they're asking you to do. And if you do have the chance to have some creative input or you're in a position to do those kind of things too, that's great. But if they're saying, hey, meat, potatoes, form floor, you know, just keep it real basic.
Right.
Don't do anything else and just sing this on the choruses. Just do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think now more than ever, I feel a little more confident creatively.
Yeah.
But it's not what pays my bills.
Right.
But that's why I love working with different artists. I love when, you know, people say, hey, this, it's got to feel like this. And or we want it to like go this way. Or just trying to like sing with some of these people too, you know, and like match their vocal pocket is really cool. I like doing that too. And it's just fun, man. I like having things for my brain to like chew on.
Yeah.
And that's why I like doing drums for a living, because it's the one gig where you can like, you're running backing tracks, calling like the next song and your other talk back. You're like singing as well. Like there's a lot, you're doing a lot and you're trying to make it look very like calm and simple.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, my brain loves that shit. So I'd say just, you know, be open-minded and just if people ask you to do something, just do it and do it really well, you know, at least, especially if you said yes to it, you know, keep an open mind to what comes your way. Whatever you do, just do it well. Even if you think the gig's bullshit, I'm not saying what I'm doing right now is bullshit at all. Let's be clear. But like, you know, if you're new to town and you're moving somewhere, you're gonna have to say yes to some stuff you don't want to do. Keep an open mind and just do it and know that it's not necessarily reflecting you, but how you perform at that gig. It could be the dumbest gig in the world, but people are going to still look at how well you did. And that's like your business card right there. So whatever you say yes to, even if it's like, well, shit, I got to pay my rent. Yeah, I'll play 5 hours and, you know, in a cornfield for a county fair.
Yeah.
You know, and just be positive with it too, man. There's a lot of sides of this job and this path that we all choose to kind of do this or put our time into this stuff. That's really mostly discouraging most of the time. So just the little wins and all the things that you can find to like help you push through and encourage your friends, celebrate their victories too. You know, if you get buddies who get on a gig or have something cool happen with their playing, just be as happy as you can be for them. Because the more people you have winning around you too, that just means you're gonna, I feel like, kind of have some of that fall into your lap too.
Hell
you
yeah, know?
Hell yes.
Network across, not up.
That was great.
Don't try to be with the best people. Try to work with people who actually just like are kind of at your level and have the same drive.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to do something. I've never seen anyone move here that just like, they put in an excruciating amount of effort and energy into this and nothing didn't happen. I just don't see it play out like that. That's our worst fear, but I really haven't seen. Most people who don't kind of get the success they want, at least here from what I've noticed, or just like day to day kind of have the outcome they want, it's very rarely because like they're not trying hard enough. Everyone here is usually giving the max amount of effort. And, and that's all you can fucking do, man. Just have fun, man. Shit's crazy, you know?
Shall we do some rapid fire questions?
Yeah, hit me.
So we already got your cookout order. Let's do, if you weren't playing drums, you would be doing.
Damn, that's a great question. Man, if I wasn't playing drums, I would still want to work in music. I'd love to be in show design.
Okay.
I love that. I love that side of it as well. I love being off the I like the idea of being off the stage. And kind of like the two dudes who, you know, got me some audition and stuff. I love that kind of work.
Yeah.
That is something, if my hands gave out and my legs stopped working, I'd be like, well, you know what? I can still like talk into a mic and try to like get a show built for people. Yeah. I love that kind of, I think that stuff's so exciting. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. I think it's such a cool relationship.
Yeah, totally.
Do you do the hot chicken?
Man, I've never had a hot chicken sandwich since I moved to Nashville.
What?
I've never had one.
Do you like spicy?
I'm bad with spice.
Okay.
I'm very bad. Okay. I'm from Ohio, so yeah. The spice levels are a little different there.
Okay.
Even like pepper, like black pepper, I'll start sweating. So
all right. Well, then that answers my question.
Okay. I got one more deep question, then you're free. So as someone that's been here, you know, 6 to 9 years, you said, or 7 years?
I think it's been 6 years.
6 years. Okay. Yeah. So you've probably more than most, you've seen kind of Nashville change a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Construction, traffic, whatever you want to call it. What's something when you think about the future of Nashville, like the next 5-10 years, that excites you?
Man, I was just talking with a drummer buddy of mine about this, and we kind of wonder, just like, you just wonder how long does a certain city have, like how long does a music scene have to live in certain like situations like here? Because man, I have no idea. Part of me thinks like, all right, I need to pay attention to where all the tour companies and production companies move if shit gets too crazy here. Because sometimes I wonder, maybe in 10 years, is all this stuff going to be gone? I could be wrong. Someone might listen to this and be like, that's way off. But I wonder, because like the exit in, right? Exit in going out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just, I don't think a lot of the industry stuff is going to still get pushed out. But it's going to make this town short of a lot of talent, I think, if it's almost impossible to live here at some point.
Yeah.
What's the question again? I kind of lost track of it.
Yeah, just maybe something on the other side of that, more positive of something that...
a little bit pessimist.
No, that's a realistic thing. Just something that maybe excites you about the change.
One thing I do love is the sturdiness of the local scene in Nashville. Like, if you're not on the road, you're playing in town and all of that. You know, anything from like Rudy's Jazz Club to Broadway to, you know, any place you can play music in town. I don't see that stuff slowing down at all. That excites me.
Yeah.
If not, I see only more development going on. That means, you know, more tourism, but some people don't like that, but it also means more work and more stuff for arts, which tends to kind of go away when shit's tough.
It's artists are getting paid now.
Especially after COVID, it's like, at this point, it's like, if you can, again, just kind of cover your bills and you're happy with that, you can definitely do that, man. And that is a gift in itself.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Love it. Perfect.
Cool. That was a tough question. You know, because I ask myself that every day. Like, what's going
to
happen?
Ask the tough ones on here.
Yeah. At least I wasn't eating something spicy. But,
sweet.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you liked it, please consider leaving us a review on the Apple Podcast app.
Also, check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.
This episode was recorded at Diamond Sound Studios, located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sponsored by Music Lab Nashville, production by The Wise Company. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.